Hello, product innovators. Today, we learn from a 30-year marketing executive on how to smooth out the customer buying process for your product.
You're listening to the Product Startup Podcast, the show that helps bring your product idea to life by chatting with successful inventors, product developers, manufacturers, and hardware industry professionals. Our goal here is to get to the bottom of what makes a product successful, from initial idea to getting your product on store shelves. We're taking you step by step to build a functional product and scale your product business. Hosted by Kevin Macko, one of North America's leading experts on hardware development for small product businesses. Now, onto the show.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, I'm very excited to introduce Eric Dickman to the show. Eric is the president of the 5 Echelon Group, a full-stack marketing agency. He's also the host of the Virtual CMO podcast, which educates businesses on how to maximize their marketing and messaging efforts. With 30 years as a marketing executive, Eric today is going to tell us how inventors, startups, and small manufacturers should market their new product and how to cut out all the potential restriction points among potential customers who are in the buying process. Now on to the interview.
Eric, welcome to the show.
Kevin, thanks for having me. It's great to be here today.
Yeah, I understand you're not in your usual setup at the moment.
I am not. You know, I live in Orlando, Florida, but have a place down here in Tampa, Florida as well. It's Super Bowl weekend. It's in the middle of COVID, so I wanted to come down and see what all the hullabaloo is all about. I know there's things set up all over the city, as you can imagine. For a marketing guy, the Super Bowl is sort of the Super Bowl of marketing as well. And so you've got a lot of brands who are coming down here to show off their products and try to get some attention. So IRS, in case you're wondering, this is a business trip.
Yes. I don't know how many folks we have listening from the depths of the IRS right now, but I'm glad you provided that footnote. Yeah, that's great. So you're also testing out your kind of virtual podcast setup. Last time I talked to you, you had this big podcast studio, and I guess now you're setting out, testing out your remote setup. Sounds great. Looks good.
Oh, well, thanks very much. Yeah, it's fun. You know, we live in an era where video is becoming so increasingly important to not only your personal brand, but to companies' brands. And so being able to sort of do video wherever you are, I think is becoming increasingly important. So this is a test of my remote setup as well.
Good stuff. Yeah, I can tell you've got the remote mic and everything. Yeah, that's pro level right there.
Yeah, my little lavalier. I feel like a news anchor.
Much appreciated. Well, Eric, let's jump into it. Let's go back in time. What's your backstory, and what's led you to kind of where you are as a leader in your space in the marketing world today?
Yeah. So for most of my career, I've been in the financial services segments, and sort of I started out as a product guy, literally sitting designing software UI designs, and eventually I graduated into product marketing and then true marketing. I spent about 18 years of my career at Oracle Corporation running their global retail financial services business. And, you know, I decided I really wanted to get out there and help small and medium-sized businesses, a lot of startups, you know, help get their footing. Marketing is getting increasingly complex, and there are a lot of things that you need to know as a business to be able to be successful and market your product. And so I really wanted to take the things that I had learned from my 30-plus years out in the corporate world and start applying those to small and mid-sized businesses and really help them grow. So I started a consulting company called the 5 Echelon Group. And for the last 2 years, I've been really focused on being what I call a virtual CMO, which is really, you know, a fractional executive to these small businesses who really aren't ready to bring on a full-time marketing leader, but they really need somebody to help create a strategic marketing plan and then help them figure out what they need to do to get that plan executed. So it's a fractional executive, and I work with a number of small businesses helping them get their marketing programs going.
You know, building the marketing plan and executing it is so key. I think of a number of our clients, lots of hardware products, and, one of the big kind of issues is, okay, once you build the product, what are the keys to selling, and what is the key to selling successfully? And really that trickles back to marketing, truly understanding how to make that happen. So I'm very excited today to go in and kind of deep dive into that to really figure out how hardware startups can plan ahead, even if they're not ready yet to market. How can they plan ahead, get there, and then when the point that they are ready to get into marketing and sales and all the rest, how can they be best positioned to do that? And I'm really excited to have you on the show to talk about that because you have quite an extensive history in the game when it comes to marketing and a lot of experience in physical products and such too with that. So first and foremost, a question at top of mind is, why is it important to understand your customers and how they're making their purchasing decisions?
I think that's a great question because, when you're building out a product, when you're designing any kind of service that you're going to sell, you really need to understand who that customer is. And that may sound simple. Well, I'm designing a gizmo and that gizmo is applicable to a lot of different people, but is it really? Who is going to be that ideal buyer for your widget? And I think many companies kind of fail to do that. And the companies that I see as being very successful are the ones who invest time and effort ahead of time to really get in, understand who their true ideal buyer is and the audience that they're trying to reach. So from a marketing perspective, marketing's expensive, right? Marketing is a cost center for your business. And in order for you to realize the benefits of the dollars that you're spending, you have to be laser focused on where you're going to be spending that money. And so in order to be laser focused, you really have to understand who your buyer is. So instead of casting a very wide net and just saying, hey, world, we've got this great new product I think you're going to love, you need to say, hey, target buyer, we've got a product that is going to solve a specific problem for you. And here's why we think you should investigate it, look at it, consider it, and spend your marketing dollars wisely to reach that very focused niche. And so a little bit of work up front to really understand your market, really understand who that ideal customer is, and then build your marketing program around that is so important. And I think the second part of that question is sort of understanding where your buyers are. So is this the kind of thing that they are going to purchase in a physical location? Are they going to go to a hardware store, a retail store to purchase a physical product? Are they going to buy it online through Amazon? Where would they be researching this product? Would it be through a promotion that you would be sending out through the mail, through an email? Would it be on LinkedIn? Would it be on Facebook? You have to understand where that ideal buyer is going to be doing their research. And then when you sort of bring all of these things together, then you can start to develop a very focused marketing strategy that really sort of attacks the problem where you're going to find the greatest chance of success. And it sounds simple, but it's amazing how many businesses don't take that step ahead of time to really understand who their buyer and their market is going to be.
Eric, this is music to my ears because one of the big things that we tout on much earlier in the process, which is in the design and development, is focus.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting that it's a big priority when you're developing a product to essentially prevent feature creep, not get too crazy, yes, not try and be everything to everyone. But I find it very interesting. Now you're talking about marketing and the exact same principle applies. Who is that laser focused niche and how do you figure out who that person is? And then of course, how do you actually attract that individual? But the more focused, the more niche you are both with your product offering, the more niche and the more targeted you can be with your marketing. And those two align very well. And I think that is a big misconception. We hear it all the time, especially at the early phases of development. People are afraid that they're going to lose out on that potential bigger market. However, if you never make a sale because you weren't targeted enough, then what's the point in worrying about the broad market spectrum? And you can always do that later. You can always do that with your second campaign or your second product or whatever else. So that's brilliant.
I think there's always this fear of, well, if I get too specific, I'm going to miss out on some potential buyers. I'm going to miss out on a particular segment of the market. And just like you said, you're going to have time to address a bigger and bigger market over time, but get some traction, get some momentum where you can be successful, and then go from there. You know, you talked about feature creep. When you're designing a product, right, you want to have that minimum viable product that you can release to the marketplace and then build from there. And I think the same is true in marketing. You want to sort of identify what is that minimal viable target audience that you can address and then build from there.
Right. Okay. So let's assume we've got a great product. We've got a great, you know, MVP. We're ready to go to production and we're ready to laser focus on who our competitor is from a marketing standpoint. How do you differentiate your product and really add value from a marketing perspective?
Oh, that's easy. You just talk about all the features that your product has. No, that's not true. So really what you have to remember is you're trying to establish an emotional connection with your buyer. You're really trying to say, hey, my product is solving a specific problem that you're having, or it's an aspirational product. It's something that you want to have because you feel somehow it's going to make your life better. And in either case, you want to be able to sort of establish that emotional connection with your buyer so that they are moved towards a purchase decision. And what companies sometimes do is they want to tout all the benefits that there are, the features that their particular product has. And in reality, many products in the marketplace, if you really are honest with yourself, will probably have a fairly similar feature set. Maybe your product has one thing that a competitor doesn't have, or two things, but it's that emotional connection that is going to drive the sale. And I think it's so important to really understand your competitors and what they're doing and how they're selling to the marketplace. What strings are they pulling? Are they just focused on those features? If so, you've got a real opportunity to reframe the marketing message to say, hey, we are going to solve this problem for you. We're going to address this pain. We're going to give you something that you don't have in your life today and let them focus on the features. That is not ultimately going to win the day. Neither is price. Price tends to be something that people focus on when they don't know what else to focus on. If you look at some of the most successful brands out there, they are not the least expensive brand in the marketplace, right? Correct. I'm talking to you on my MacBook Pro and my iPhone is sitting over there and I'm wearing my Apple EarPods. These are not the cheapest products on the marketplace, but I have a strong emotional connection with that brand.
Yeah, that's brilliant. You know, the emotional connection too, you're really talking about selling that end user's really identifying the value or preventing the pain point, not necessarily what your feature is to prevent that pain point. That the features are almost like the backup evidence, your supporting evidence.
Yes.
So here's what we're going to sell you. We're going to sell you, you know, the dream. But on the back end, how we're going to do it is through our unique features or our special benefits. You know, something you mentioned there too, in terms of competition, which I always think about. A lot of inventors or startups think, well, I'm the first mover. I don't have any competition. Well, that's also not necessarily true, because although you might have the first unique feature or benefit of that particular product, usually buyers have an alternative option. In fact, one of those options, one of your competitors, is the do-nothing competitor. Right, to
exactly right.
Not choose your product, but also there's other ways for them to solve that pain point, or there's other ways that a customer might perceive that that pain point could be solved with a competitive product. So I think it's brilliant that you bring up the competitive element, even if it's a newer proprietary or whatever else. You still need to focus on what your key advantage is, both from a feature standpoint, if you keep that MVP, but also thinking down the road in positioning your marketing to, what value are you selling the customer? What do they get out of it? How does their life change with it? Not what the feature is. That's great.
I may be, you know, looking at buying a new car, for example, and looking at the marketplace and saying, well, there's Lexus and BMW and Audi. I could look at all those and say, those are my competitors. But actually, a competitor might be a new set of tires, because that's all I really need to make my current car better than it is today. And that's a purchase decision that I could make. And so I think your point is spot on. And no decision or choosing to spend your money on something else or some kind of an alternative, putting a Band-Aid on what you already have, is, you know, is equally important to look at. I mean, many times you lose business to no decision. That's a very common thing, especially with bigger and more complex products.
Right. Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's the same in our business too, right? I mean, we've got a very specific niche targeting startups for product development in the hardware space. However, our biggest competitor isn't another business. Our biggest competitor is an entrepreneur, you know, losing steam or deciding, I really don't want to, I don't feel like moving forward, or I don't feel the vision, or I don't feel the outcome. So I understand it just from our own perspective, let alone our clients, they run into the exact same, thoughts. How do I educate a market to believe in the value and then execute on that purchase? So, let's get into the nuts and bolts here. Let's assume we've got our MVP product. We're targeting our messaging. We understand that we need to sell the end value. How do we optimize that interaction, or that selling interaction, or that marketing interaction to those prospective buyers?
Yeah, I'm sure we've all experienced getting emails in our inbox or getting a message through LinkedIn, and it's somebody that you don't even know. And in the very first conversation, they're asking to set up a meeting, or we've got something that could solve a problem. How do you know that? You've never even had a conversation with me. You don't know what my issues are. And I think when you're looking to sort of remove friction in the buying process, what you want to do is you want to add value, and then maybe ask for something. So what I encourage a lot of businesses to do is to say, okay, you've got a product that solves a particular problem in a niche. So what could you do then to add value to the people who might be looking for that product or service? Is there some kind of a document or a report that you could share with them? Maybe it's just information. You've come across some interesting facts that you think your target buyer might be interested in learning. You can become an authority. You can become somebody that they trust even before you've asked them for anything. And I think that that's a very important point. You want to give value before you ask for something in return. And there is a fear that maybe somebody comes to your website and they're looking around and you're like, well, I've got to get their email address. I've got to get their phone number so I can follow up with them. If you are putting out good value, putting out good content, they will keep coming back. They will keep exploring. They will eventually reach out to you. There's a time and a place to ask for that information, but focus first on giving value. We've got all these social media channels that we can use. And if you'll notice that a lot of businesses, one of my favorite companies is HubSpot. I use them for my marketing automation and CRM. They put out so much content. And in the realm of marketing, if I go to do a search on Google about a particular topic, chances are within the top 10 listings, there's going to be some blog article or something that they've written that addresses a question that I have. They're constantly putting out that value. And I think as a business, you need to look at what can I do to sort of demonstrate that value in my interactions with my potential buyers so that I can build that trust. And again, I get back to sort of establishing that trusted relationship, that emotional connection. I think it's so important.
Well, and personally, you're a great example of that. I just know for your company, you've got the virtual CMO podcast.
Yes.
You're providing all kinds of like learning sources. Even on your website, I'm just looking at it right here. You've got the learn more button. There's all kinds of information that people who are interested in marketing, understanding their, getting an assessment plan, understanding the different elements of a marketing plan. Like you are a great example. You are providing that value, and it's free. It's highly curated, highly experienced information that is getting passed along to folks. And then at some point, if they're ready to buy, they'll give you a call, right? And then that's how it converts into a lead. So I think that's a great example, just yourself, at how you are really being at the forefront of a thought leader. And that is transitioning to value back to your prospective customers and existing customers, which will provide business in the end.
Well, thanks for that. And I would say that for many people, if you're selling a physical product, as an example, when I go on Amazon to look for a product, and this is no interaction with a website or anything like that, this is just browsing, looking for something in particular. I get a listing and it has pictures of the product from all different angles. It maybe has a video showing somebody using the product or how this product fits into their work environment or their life. It's got a very thorough description. It's got a whole set of pictures and text that describe what the product does and how it can value. In other words, even in something as simple as an Amazon product listing, you can add a lot of value back because you're telling people how this product or service is going to impact them in a positive way, how it's going to solve a problem. Value doesn't necessarily mean that you have to create tons of white papers and infographics and things like that. It can be just in the way that you present your product or service to a potential buyer.
That's a very good point. And Amazon, I think, is a good example of this. I know when we're looking at products that you're considering buying or whatnot, there's a huge difference between a product that just shows a couple of pictures and has a two-line description, and maybe they're four bullet points, which is at the top of the page. But only a handful of companies truly take advantage of that middle section of the page, which you can put huge amounts of both image and text content in there to really explain the value, but then go one step beyond that and say, well, here's some information surrounding this product that can help help you buy it or even not buy it if it's not the right customer. But the reality is, if you're very focused and if you have a focused message and you're providing that great value, you have a far greater conversion rate with those types of ads, because that's what it is. Essentially, it's Amazon, that page, once you've landed, once you actually have a customer sitting there looking at your page, that's your one moment of opportunity to truly help them understand how your product is valuable and how it fits into their life and also everything surrounding that. So if you don't take advantage of that, you're wasting that click.
That's so true. You think of a company like a Best Buy or an IKEA, for example. They have virtual reality now, so you can see how that 65-inch TV is going to look in your room, or you can see how that chair is going to fit into your living room or the bed into your bedroom or whatnot. Those are technologies that they are employing to help build that emotional connection, because once you see that TV hanging on your wall, you're like, I got to go get that TV. Right? It's a way of sort of adding value, making people feel comfortable with the purchasing decision before they ever have to do that. And you're not asking them to buy it. You're not saying, hey, will you buy this TV? You're saying, I want to show you what this is going to look like and show you why it's going to be the best option for you.
That's great. So how do you then, from your experience, from a marketing perspective, how do you really lubricate or simplify that buying process?
Yeah, I think this is really important because you want to make it super easy to buy things. You don't want to make layers of paperwork that people have to fill out or odd payment systems. You want to make things very straightforward. I'll give you a great example. I just recently got the Apple credit card. As I said, I've got an emotional connection to that brand. So I got the Apple credit card. I opened up my phone. There was a thing, we'd love for you to have the Apple credit card. I clicked on it. They said, of course you're approved. And they said, the only thing that I needed to enter was my income. Everything else was pre-filled. The process showed an approval. The card ended up in my virtual wallet immediately. And 3 days later, I got this nice little package in the mail with a titanium physical card. It was a seamless process from a buyer's standpoint. Now, compare that to other buying processes where people ask you to fill out forms. Maybe you go to a company where you've made purchases before. They don't remember your password on the website, or they're not using keychains and things like that. So you have to figure out what was their password. You have to re-enter information. They don't accept different kinds of payments. So they make the buying process tough. We don't accept Amex. We only accept this, or we want you to pay by this format. There are a lot of things that you can do that just streamlines that process. Amazon made a name for themselves with one-click ordering, right?
Yep.
Push this button, it's on its way. That is the ultimate simplification in terms of the buying process. So if you've got a more complicated process that does require more steps, that does require the collection of more information, you've got to figure out, if I know information about my potential buyer, am I at least pre-filling this information to save them keystrokes to do that? am I putting this information in a way that makes it very easy and streamlined for them to fill out? Am I saving things like passwords on the website? All of this may sound relatively straightforward, but every little point of friction in the buying process gives your potential buyer an opportunity to opt out, to say, oh, this doesn't work. I remember I was actually buying some camera gear, and I was trying to buy it on the website, and I kept hitting the pay now button and getting errors. Well, how many times am I going to do that before I say, okay, I'm going to go to a competitor's website and purchase it there? So I think whatever you can do to remove those barriers, to streamline the process, is a win for your customer and a simplification of the buying process.
You know, it's clear that there is a common thread here, and it's MVP, simplification, no extra bells and whistles, it really just hitting the nail on the head for that key target demographic, all the way from original development, now all the way right through to the payment process. Really, the more that you can simplify and smooth out every single element, the less headaches you have, the less people that are going to leave, the less frustration that's going to occur, of course, which leads to the last thing, which I'd like to talk to you about, which is after sale. And I think that's a huge missed opportunity for a lot of product companies. So what have you seen as some best practices for the point where you've actually closed that sale? They hit the buy button, that your job as a company isn't over yet. In fact, one of your greatest opportunities is right around the corner. So talk to us about that, Eric.
You know, it's interesting. We talked at the beginning of the show about the fact that I'm doing some remote work today here in Tampa. And as part of that, I've had to buy some equipment, some lights, some microphones and things like that. And I'm very interested to see how it arrives, because we talked a little bit about this emotional connection. And there's nothing more exciting to me as a marketing guy than receiving a product that I purchased, and it comes in this box that is clearly thought out in a way that says, we are excited that you bought our product. Now let us introduce you to this product and make you feel good about that buying decision. So that emotional connection now has carried over from, you know, the dopamine rush that I got by pushing that buy now button to now opening up that package and seeing the product in its physical form. And you compare that to, you know, something that you get in a standard, you know, cardboard box that, you know, maybe just has a little instruction sheet. And oh, by the way, they put something in there that says, please give us a 5-star review on Amazon. What a difference in the experience, right? You want to sort of keep that emotional connection going after the purchase, because if you've done a good job, your customer likes your product or service, chances are when they need something similar or they need another one, they're going to come back. So what you want to do is you want to keep thinking about, how can I add value after the service? Don't ask them immediately for a 5-star review when they just have opened up their product. How about following up with them, you know, a week later and say, you know, we hope you are enjoying your new product. We'd love to hear, you know, some feedback. And then maybe, oh, by the way, if you really like our product, we'd love for you to leave a review. And oh, by the way, to thank you for your business, we'd love to give you 20% off your next purchase, or something along those lines, thanking them for their purchase, rewarding them for being a valued and ongoing customer, and giving them offers and incentives to do business with you again. And if it's a complicated process where maybe you have dedicated salespeople that try to sell this physical product, well, then are your salespeople following up with that customer? Are they asking how the purchase went? Are they asking how the implementation went? Are they asking if the customer is satisfied? Do you ask them for feedback? What would you like to see in future versions of this product or the next release or whatever it may be? It's keeping that dialogue open. People really appreciate it when they feel a company cares about them after the sale.
Absolutely. And that adds to, you know, a big topic, which is authenticity.
Yes.
So if you're very focused, you're dedicated to providing real and true value to your customers, that is going to come out in a very authentic, almost non-big corporate way, which is, as a small business, one of your biggest advantages against the big corporations that you're either competing with or that may want to compete with you. You are nimble. You were agile. You were very passionate about a very specific product or very specific offering or very specific value add to those customers. So that allows you a great opportunity there. Three things I think about that I like to tell people when they're delivering, especially their first product run. And this ties exactly into what you're saying. One, on the first, let's say 100 units or whatever is reasonable to do, just handwrite something on it. Even if it's on the back of the box, it says, thanks, exclamation mark, smiley face in an actual real marker or something like that. Second, an easy one. Even because again, you don't have to make the super fancy packaging to have that emotional attachment. If cost is a major issue, just include a letter from the owner or a letter from the sales rep or a letter from whoever else and say, thanks for your purchase. Again, if you can hand sign it, if you have the time, great. If not, if you really don't have the time, then even just a letter describing, you're only writing this letter one time, describe what it means to you that they've purchased it, that they've actually invested in your future. And I think that can be so powerful. The final thing is, again, if you have the time, but this one can be really valuable, especially on a first product launch in a number of ways, A, making your clients really happy, but B, and arguably more importantly, figuring out how to perfect and improve and refine or add to your product in the future, is just give them a call or shoot them a quick email. At least your first 50 or 100 users, right? Either from the sales rep or whatever else. And that's what you said about following up. But that's a dual-edged sword, which is beautiful, right? Which is learn from that information and make somebody incredibly happy that they just spent whatever it is, $10, $20, $50 on your thing. And magically, you got all of these little very personal touches to it. Because those first customers are your most valuable customers. That's almost the make or break of your new offering, especially as a startup. Or even if you're further along the road, if you're a mid-sized company and it's a new product launch, you still want that same emotional attachment with that new product. So I'm really glad you brought all that up.
Well, you know what I love about what you just said is all of those ideas cost a whopping $0.
Zero.
Right? It's just it's the thought that counts, as they say, right? It's having that personal connection with somebody and doing something that shows you cared. And I think that's so true when you're talking about a startup or an initial product launch. You know, people in some ways are taking a bit of a risk, right? You're a bit of an unknown. You don't have necessarily that authority or that reputation that's already built up. So making people feel comfortable that they took a chance, if you will, on something that's new and maybe a little unknown, I think is an excellent idea. And just, again, it shows you're authentic. It shows that you're really looking to build those relationships on a long-term basis.
That's great. Eric, much appreciated for all your insight. If people want to get in touch with you to help with their marketing strategy, their marketing plans, their execution of marketing, what's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So my company is called the Five Echelon Group. So that's 5echelon.com on the web. I would be happy to sit down with anybody and just talk about their marketing plan. And if they have one or if they don't have them, what they need to do to put a plan in place. As you mentioned, I also run a series called The Virtual CMO. It's a podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we bring on thought leaders each week to talk about different elements of marketing and how they can help small and mid-sized businesses really grow and accelerate. Kevin, you were nice enough to be a guest on a show recently, and it's just a joy to meet all of these people out there in the world who have real world experience and are willing to share that value with other businesses to help them accelerate their growth and maybe not go down a path that's going to cost them time and money. So I'm also on LinkedIn, Eric Dickman. Would love to connect with anyone.
Eric, much appreciated. Again, that's 5echelon.com for your website there. And the podcast is the Virtual CMO Podcast, which is Chief Marketing Officer Podcast. So it's all things marketing. Eric, thanks again for taking your time, especially when you're. I know you're very busy with Super Bowl marketing, which is a crazy thing going on right now. But I really appreciate you taking the time and getting the full virtual remote setup for us going, so that you could share these insights. Thanks again.
Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for having me on the show. It's really been a pleasure.
Much appreciated. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Product Startup Podcast. the show that teaches you what it really takes to bring your product to market and turn it into a big success. This podcast series is brought to you by Macco Design and Invent, the original and leading firm in North America to provide global caliber end-to-end physical consumer product development to startups, inventors, and small product business clients. If you're looking for product development help on your invention, head over to MaccoDesign.com. That's MaccoDesign.com for a free consultation from one of Macco Design's four design studios from coast to coast. Thanks for listening and see you next time.